I thought I'd start by briefly introducing to you Australia's Security Service. So we were formed in 1949 off the back of discovering that Australia was penetrated by Soviet spies. We were named the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation some 4 months after we started because, unfortunately, for the first 4 months, we were known as Australia's Security Service. And that acronym would not survive in a modern world. So I would be here as the Director General of AS. ASIC and ASIO have more in common than you might think. ASIC and ASIO are separated by a single letter. ASIC is a watchdog. I hope you don't mind me describing like that, Joe. ASIO is a guard dog. We are both proudly independent. We can make decisions that impact lives and livelihoods. And there's at least one more similarity, Joe. I suspect you, like me, no one smiles when we walk into the room. People always assume, at least in my case, I'm the bearer of bad news. Unusually for a spy chief, I'm an optimist. I don't think it's good enough for someone in my position to talk about the threats without talking about the solutions. So this morning, I want to focus on a more positive message than you might have expected. While our security environment is degrading, you do not need to be insecure about your security. While the threats facing Australia are significant, they are not insurmountable. While foreign intelligence services are targeting your people, your networks, your secrets, and your enterprises, there are steps you should be taking to protect them. The threats are foreseeable, the vulnerabilities are knowable, and the risks are manageable. And while your business isn't national security is your business. But first, the bad news. Australia has entered a period of strategic surprise and security fragility. We're facing multifaceted, merging, intersecting, and cascading threats. The major geopolitical, economic, and social and security challenges of the 1930s, 70s, and 90s have converged. As one of my analysts put it, with an uncharacteristic nod to popular culture, everything, everywhere, all at once. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, Joe? So what does this mean for Australia's corporate sector? Most obviously, great power competition is driving unprecedented levels of espionage. A range of countries, some we consider friendly, have a relentless hunger for strategic advantage and an insatiable appetite for inside information. Most commonly, this manifests in the theft of privileged information. Information about government decision-making, defence capabilities and intellectual property, or cutting-edge research, particularly if it has both military and civilian applications. Increasingly, though, foreign intelligence services are broadening their collection requirements. They are aggressively targeting the private sector projects and negotiations and investments that might give that foreign government and a foreign company a commercial advantage. And like criminals, they have been aggressively targeting customer data. ASIO has investigated countless Australian examples. Nation-state hackers compromised the network of a major Australian exporter, making off with commercially sensitive information. That theft gave the foreign country a significant advantage in subsequent contract negotiations. In another case, they stole the blueprints of an Australian innovation and produced mass cheap knockoffs that nearly bankrupt the innovator. Foreign companies connected to intelligence services have sought to buy access to sensitive personal data sets, sought to buy land near sensitive military sites, and sought to collaborate with researchers developing sensitive technologies. A visiting academic with links to a foreign government broke into a restricted technology lab and filmed its contents. Earlier this year, ASIO partnered with the Australian Institute of Criminology to calculate what espionage costs the Australian economy. The conservative estimate is that espionage cost Australia $12.5 billion in 2023-24. And that figure includes an estimated $2 billion of trade secrets from intellectual property stolen from Australian companies and businesses by cyber spies in 1 year. Of course, If organizations such as yours are unable to deliver the service or the function your customers pay for and depend upon, the scale of that damage will be catastrophically worse. And worse still, if there was something practical you could have done to prevent it. I'll circle back to this later. Espionage and foreign interference are not the only, or not our only, principal security concerns. Growing levels of grievance, conspiracy, and anti-authority beliefs are driving spikes in politically motivated violence and making acts of terrorism more likely. I spoke about this dynamic last week at the Lowy Lecture. Of particular interest to the business community, we are now tracking a troubling increase in anarchist and revolutionary extremism, often targeting industry itself. Since October 23, anti-Israel activists have increasingly used disruptive tactics such as vandalism and violent protests targeting companies accused of providing weapon components. Rapid advances in technology are incubating and accelerating all of these security concerns. As a result of both the global and domestic drivers, over the next 5 years, ASIO expects a complex, challenging, and changing security environment will become more dynamic, more diverse, and more degraded. Dynamic because Australia has never faced so many threats at scale at once. And of course, I note the title of this conference. Diverse because the threats are intersecting and boundaries are blurring. Foreign spies are increasingly using criminal cutouts to do their dirty work. And degraded because the debts authoritarian regimes are willing to go to. They're behaving more aggressively, more recklessly, and more dangerously, more willing to engage in what we will call high-harm activities. Given the title of this conference, I'd like to dive a little deeper into one of those high-harm activities, sabotage. We expect sabotage, particularly cyber-enabled sabotage, to pose an increasing threat in the next 5 years, both in terms of adversary capability and adversary intent. Advances in technology, including artificial intelligence and a proliferation of capabilities for sale or hire online, make it easy for regimes to have the tools and the weapons they need to conduct sabotage. At the same time, our critical infrastructure networks are increasingly interconnected and interdependent, which expands the vulnerabilities and the potential access points. The Internet of Things is only as strong as its weakest password, insecure configuration, unpacked system, or careless operator. These developments are radically improving the capabilities of foreign regimes and their intelligence agencies. But more concerning from my point of view is the evolution in their intent. I've previously said we're getting closer to the threshold for high impact sabotage. Well, I regret to inform you we're there now. Nation states have been building capability for decades, but their intent has been to commit espionage and foreign interference, to steal and meddle. With global tensions rising, some are more likely now to pull the trigger on higher harm activities. Authoritarian regimes are growing more willing to disrupt or destroy critical infrastructure, to impede decision-making, damage the economy, undermine warfighting capabilities, and sow social discord. They see sabotage as a tool of coercion, disruption, and distraction, and retaliation to test national resolve, readiness, and response. Russia's reckless campaign with incendiary devices in Europe is a potent example. And while Russia's actions demonstrate that physical sabotage remains a threat, it's cyber-enabled sabotage that presents a more acute concern for Australia and our country. Cyber is the most immediate vector for sabotage. It's an attractive option for foreign regimes because it's low cost but high impact, as well as being deniable and scalable. So how real is this threat? ASIO is aware of one nation state, and no prizes for guessing who, conducting multiple attempts to scan and penetrate critical infrastructure in Australia and other Five Eyes countries, targeting water, transport, telecommunications, and energy networks. This reconnaissance is highly sophisticated, using top-notch tradecraft to find your networks, test for vulnerabilities, knock on the digital doors, and check the digital locks. And when they have penetrated your networks, they actively and aggressively map your systems and seek to maintain persistent, undetected access that enables them to conduct sabotage at a time and moment of their choosing. You may have heard about the oddly named Salt Typhoon and Vault Typhoon hacking groups. I know many of you are confounded by those silly nicknames, as am I, so let me decode them further. These hacking groups work for the Chinese government intelligence and military agencies. Both groups were involved in the theft of sensitive information. But the real danger was the threat of sabotage, disruption to critical infrastructure. And while these Chinese hacking groups have similar code names, they are profoundly different. Salt Typhoon's intent was espionage. They penetrated the United States telecommunications systems to gain access to the nation's communications through a strategic spying operation. And they have been probing our telecommunications networks in Australia too. In contrast, Vault Typhoon's intent was disruptive. The hackers compromised American critical infrastructure networks to pre-position for sabotage. The penetrations gave China the ability to turn off telecommunications and other critical infrastructure networks. And yes, we have seen the Chinese hackers probing our critical infrastructure here as well. Once again, once access is gained, the network is penetrated. What happens next is a matter of intent, not capability. I don't think we, and I mean all of us, truly appreciate how disruptive, how devastating this could be. I spend a lot of time thinking about the CIA, confidentiality, integrity, and availability, not the Central Intelligence Agency. I certainly don't want to end up on one of their watch lists. But let's be honest, there's plenty of evidence that companies continue to struggle to keep theirs and our data safe today. Confidentiality. Companies that fail to protect their data from theft have little or no chance of protecting critical infrastructure or their critical systems and services from disruption. That question of availability keeps me awake at night. The loss of availability in any part of our critical infrastructure can be devastating. Devastating for the company, devastating for the consumers, and devastating for our nation. Consider what happens when we've experienced a relatively short and isolated outage in the telecommunications sector, unrelated to sabotage. The cascading effects were more significant and widespread than most people expected. There were social impacts when families couldn't communicate, critical medical impacts when people couldn't pull 000, financial impacts when businesses could not process their transactions, and transport impacts when a vehicle charging system went down. Services that people take for granted proved uncomfortably fragile. That's one phone network not working for less than one day. Imagine the implications if a nation state took down all of our networks, or turned off the power during a heat wave, or polluted our water supply, or crippled our financial system. I assure you, these are not hypotheticals. Foreign governments have elite teams investigating these possibilities today. And there are multiple scenarios where nation states' intent could shift from stealing and meddling to disruption and damage, to cripple an Australian company as a trade competitor, to cause disruption or panic during a critical decision in Australia, like during an election or a major contract or trade negotiation, or to deter or even prevent Australia from being able to defend its national interest in peacekeeping or conflict scenarios overseas. Some of the scenarios the Australian Institute of Criminology modelled for our cost of espionage report were eye-opening and eye-watering. The cyber-enabled sabotage of critical infrastructure could cost the economy $1.1 billion per incident. An economy-wide week-long disruption will cost $6 billion. And in its report, the Institute stressed that these are extremely conservative calculations and the real-world impacts could be significantly more. The impacts of sabotage or successful sabotage on critical infrastructure could extend well beyond that of a financial cost. So what can you do? I'm always loath to be too prescriptive about how organizations should respond to these threats. ASIO is your security service, not your security manager. We're not a regulator like ASIC, and that's probably a good thing because I doubt I would be a benign regulator. As a rule, an effective defense against potential espionage and sabotage shares the same DNA from your defenses against other foreseeable corporate challenges, such as criminal theft, fraud, workplace accidents, and equipment failures. So why are boards and leadership teams surprised when they're faced with an outage or a compromise? And why do they struggle? Now I feel I'm starting to sound a lot like a regulator, or perhaps worse, like a lecturer, but it's something I'm very passionate about. I'm passionate because I know, and my organization knows, in 99.999% of the cases, any incident that we look at involves a vulnerability with a known fix that just wasn't addressed, and almost always a supervisor that's shocked but not surprised. The signs were there, but again, the vulnerability wasn't addressed. So I appreciate there's no such thing as 100% security. Yes, nation states can deploy a zero-day attack on your IT system and can successfully recruit an inside person to your organization who displays no behavioral concerns. But they are edge cases. I think we, all of us, need to do much better at managing this risk. Failures to maintain the confidentiality and integrity of data occur literally every day in this country. We cannot assume we're doing any better of a job protecting our critical infrastructure. This is concerning because this threat is foreseeable. Nation states are already mapping our networks. The vulnerabilities are knowable. And again, every security incident involves a problem with a known fix and/or a manager who is shocked but not surprised. These risks are manageable, and there are simple things you can do to protect your networks. You got to start by understanding what is valuable and what is vulnerable in your business. What data, systems, services, and people are particularly important to you and your customers? What data, systems, services, and people are at risk? Where are those things stored? Who has access to it? And how well are they protected? Once you understand that, you can manage the risk in a coherent and connected way. You've got to look across your whole enterprise, recognizing that good security is a connected web, not silos of excellence with deep chasms in between. Threats are constantly changing, and our responses need to constantly change accordingly. Good security cannot be point in time. It's an enduring responsibility. As a leader or a board, I ask yourself this question. If these threats are foreseeable and our vulnerabilities are knowable, what are we doing to manage the risk, both at an operational and governance level? Boards need to be curious and discerning about the information provided to them. You can't PowerPoint your way out of this risk, and don't let management do that to you. The best advice I've received about a leader's ability and responsibilities in this space came from Margaret Stone. Margaret was the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security, the closest thing we have to a spy regulator. As a former federal court judge, Margaret understood things will go wrong, mistakes will be made, but she always distinguished between a verdict and a sentence. Margaret made the point to me that we can't prevent all bad things from happening. And if you're found guilty, but you took all reasonable steps to prevent the foreseeable harm, that would be considered and reflected in your sentence. So I can't be clearer. If these risks are foreseeable, the vulnerabilities are knowable, there is no excuse for taking all reasonable steps. And complexity is not an excuse. Something must be dealt with. But doing that, you protect yourself against uncertainty and adverse findings if a bad event does occur. And Joe, I note you made an eerily similar observation in 2023 when you said, and I quote, "If things go wrong, ASIC will be looking for the right case where the company directors and boards failed to take reasonable steps." In Margaret Stone's words, they were foreseeable harms. And to continue Margaret's formulation, leaders have a responsibility to take reasonable steps to prevent and mitigate them. Now, everyone in this room is a successful leader managing significant risks within finite resources to deliver important services for Australia and Australians. If your business is worthwhile, then it is also worthwhile for a foreign competitor to steal from it, to mess with it, or to turn it off. So the question I have for you today is this. If this threat is real and foreseeable, the vulnerabilities are knowable, and the risks are manageable, are you taking all reasonable steps to manage this risk effectively? Reasonable steps to prepare and prevent compromise or disruption, and reasonable steps to respond to a compromise or disruption. Espionage, including cyber espionage or compromised networks, are more foreseeable than inevitable. They're literally happening every day. And as I said earlier, we've now reached the threshold for high impact sabotage. Once someone has access to your network, what they do next is a matter of intent, not capability. What you do in response to all of this is up to you. But you can take steps right now to prepare for this dynamic, diverse, integrated security environment, which is our future, to protect your business, your customers, and the nation's interest. Good security doesn't happen by accident. This means reflecting on what you've seen and what I've outlined today. The threat of sabotage is foreseeable, the vulnerabilities are knowable, and the risks are manageable. And again, you can't PowerPoint pack your way out of this risk. Your business may not be national security, but national security is your business. Thank you.